Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to our monthly show, The Choice is Yours, where we discuss impacts of a certain product. We discuss social impacts, environmental impacts, health impacts, etc. We try to find out as much as we can about a topic and then share it with all of you. My name's Sheila.
My name is Doro.
And I'm Danny.
All right, so today we are going into a topic that is way bigger than one episode. That is milk. So today we'll touch on the health aspect, a little bit on the environmental impact, and try to understand better the farming system that milk comes from nowadays.
But there's going to be so much more to say about this next month, and so we're going to go deeper and deeper and look at other dairy products like yogurt, sour cream, butter, cheese, things like goat milk. We're going to cover the raw versus pasteurized and get into a bunch of really interesting stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot to cover. Then in March, we're going to discuss milk substitutes such as almond, soy, and rice milk. We've discussed covering
Like dairy substitutes in general.
So
there's a lot to say about that. Yes. We might do a year of milk. Watch out.
Wow, a 3 months topic. We've never done that. But hey, people, we can do it. And it's important. We got to go through that because clearly we all don't know enough about these products that we all use. I mean, maybe not all of us, but most of us. So together we'll learn more about the milk industry overall, to be able to make better choices next time we go to the store.
But one thing is for sure, and that is that they are lying to us with the advertising about the beautiful cows and the green pastures and some cute little blonde kids drinking a big cup of milk. So let's see what's going on behind this image for real.
All right, so let's dive in.
The most commonly consumed dairy products come from cows, goats, and sheep. Other less common milk animals include buffaloes, camels, yaks, horses, reindeers, and donkeys. That is news to me.
You don't want to drink the milk of your donkeys, Sheila?
Well, my female donkey hasn't bared any children yet.
Oh.
So there is no milk present, but maybe one day.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to want to try that if you get to that point. You'll have to bring a tasting for us.
You know that in Bolivia, people just come to the market, let's call it the farmer's market, with their donkeys, and they milk it in front of the people, and you drink the hot milk out of the animal.
Fresh. Wow, yeah. That is fresh.
That is raw. Yeah.
Nutrient dense.
That is raw. That is raw as it gets. I just can't imagine having horse milk, but maybe that's just, it just doesn't compute in my brain. But yeah, it's interesting.
All right, but a part of all that, cow's milk account actually for 83% of the total milk that is produced globally. That's, okay, just a number out there, 1,400 billion pounds. Because it's weird, they count milk in pounds for some reason,
very
not in gallons.
Okay, but, I don't even know what a pound of milk looks like. Nah, it's kind of hard to pound it.
So the first evidence of dairy consumption dates back over 6,000 years. Over the past couple millennia, there has been an incredible amount of innovation when it comes to processing, fermenting, and consuming dairy products.
In 2022, the value of the dairy market worldwide was estimated to be about $893 billion, which is projected to grow to $1,243 billion, they say, by 2028.
And while the world consumes more dairy, American milk consumption is actually down 37% since 1970. And the USDA estimates that the U.S. residents still consume an average of 0.8 cups per person each day.
Oh, yeah. That's so weird, right? Because, like, for example, I don't drink milk, so...
I don't know anybody that drinks milk anymore. Uh-huh. So some people are drinking a few more than a
they're making
cup or
up
two.
For it.
Yeah, they're making up for the rest of us.
You know, Judge, my husband, he grew up in a... dairy in Wisconsin, so in the dairy state,
right.
And one of his friends was a dairy farmer, and Josh remembers going to their house, and and in that family, every adult around the table were drinking one cup of milk at every meal.
Oh my goodness,
a lot of milk.
A lot of milk. So maybe they are the kind of people who bring the average up.
And
so in 1919, the milk specialist of the dairy division began to organize educational milk campaigns in cities and in rural communities to deal with the surpluses that were generated by the increased production of milk and dairy products during the World War I. So as a result of ongoing milk campaigns, sustainable increases in consumption of milk occurred.
And during World War II, food rationing was an indelible part of the home effort, but milk was not rationed, and then consumption jumped. When the war ended, there emerged an ideal solution to address both children's nutrition and the boom of milk production. This was milk at school lunches.
Then in 1946, President Harry S. Truman signed what is now known as the National School Lunch Act. 8 years later, the special milk program helped bring another 400 million pints of milk into American schools, in addition to what had already been a part of the school lunch menu.
Wow.
That's a lot of milk.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen just because people loved milk. It's interesting to understand that it happened because the government at one point decided to push it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that we are all adults, I don't know, I am, whether or not you consume dairy as a personal, that's a personal decision. But it's important to inform ourselves as consumers of the various impacts from what we eat. And here is a story that validates so much that statement.
Okay, so check this out. The Washington Post reported that a high percentage of Americans do not have a rudimentary understanding of food or agriculture. Experiencing food as an industrial product that doesn't look much like the original animal or plant. 16 million Americans think that chocolate milk comes from brown cows.
You've got to be kidding me. That is way too high of a number. 16 million Americans,
that's like almost 7% of adults in this country that believe that chocolate milk comes from brown cows, which is pretty mind-blowing.
Well, at least that really validates what we do on that show.
Right.
We need education about food. But yeah. I'm thinking now maybe what we're saying is too complicated. So if you are part of those 7%, don't worry. Let me explain to you. So chocolate milk is actually white milk that comes from whichever colored cows. And some chocolate has been added to it. And we did a show about chocolate, too, to explain that it comes from a tree that it's called the cocoa tree. How do you say cocoa?
Cacao.
Cacao tree. Yeah. And so that what we eat, it's the fruit of the tree, and it's cooked and blah, blah, blah in a special way. And then we add sugar to it, and that's the chocolate. And you add it to milk, and you get chocolate milk.
Wow, thank you, Dora.
That's cool.
and no shame to anybody who did not know
totally.
That.
I mean,
it just sounds so silly.
I grew up in a city. No cows were nearby.
Yeah.
I mean,
just fill in the gaps however you can.
And it depends on who's informing you.
Yeah.
You know, of what's on the dinner table and like being so.
Yeah.
No
disclaimer.
I
come from two dairy families, so I've known that for a while.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You saw it from a young age.
Yep.
So in the same article, they also said that 40% of fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, that were part of the study. In California, they didn't know that that hamburger comes from cows as well.
Wow.
I wonder where they thought it came from.
And currently, many people are conditioned to think that if you need food, that you can just go to the store. But it's important to understand where food comes from before that point, especially when it comes to dairy.
Yeah. And so let's go to the basics. So milk comes from the mammary gland of the female cow, and the cow produces milk only when she has had a baby, a calf. That's just like for the human mothers, you only have milk right after having a baby. And the longer you sit, you suck on that tit, the longer the cow can produce milk.
Milk...
Milk is therefore naturally produced for a calf, not for humans. And humans have our own version of this. It comes from the human mother's breast. And actually, human milk is quite different than cow milk.
Cows typically start producing milk when they're about 2 years old after they've given birth to their first calf.
And another aspect that people may not have in mind is that just like human, cows produce some females and some male babies. They are called the calves. And only the female will be able to produce milk. So what's going to happen with the male? We don't know. We'll talk about it in the next show. That's going to be quite a story. Be ready.
Yeah, just like I just want to say here too, just like a mom, like a human mother, a calf and its mother have a very special
right.
bond.
Yeah.
And all too often in this industry, they're separated.
Yeah.
Yep.
And to have a baby, you usually need a daddy, right? Well, not in this current milk industry. Most female cows on commercial dairy farms never even see a bull. They're inseminated by trained technicians using semen from a carefully selected bull for its traits that are relevant to the business.
Yes. So artificial insemination is a growing industry in the U.S. and abroad, and it allows farmers to breed good traits like fertility and milk quality into their calves, and they're trying to breed out bad.
And so Paul von Raden, that's a genetic researcher at the Animal Improvement Programs Laboratory of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, he said that an average dairy bull produces 10,000 daughters and 10,000 sons during his lifetime.
Oh, that is too much. Oh, the proportions are not right there. It's just, it sounds bad. There are at least 10 bulls that have produced more than 1 million units of semen and several bulls that make more than $3 million a year, he said.
Jeez. Oh, so having so many offspring increases the chances of inbreeding. They have a computer registry keeping track of the cows and bull genetics. This is what Van Raden shared.
So at this point, I guess you are all wondering, are the semen get collected from the bulls, right? Are you?
No.
Are you wondering?
I'm scared.
Okay, do your own research because we cannot talk about that on the radio, but there are some funny videos on YouTube if you've never seen it.
I watched one after this. I watched it and it was... My hand was over my mouth.
I know,
that was it dropped open.
Oh,
and
gosh.
That's my reaction.
Can't get the visual.
Okay. It's worse than you imagine.
No.
I don't know how.
Don't check it out if you can't. Be careful. Okay, so now you have the overall picture of how this all happens. We're going to talk about the health impacts of drinking milk in the second part of our show. But for now, let's take a closer look at the milk industry to better understand the context.
So here is an article from September 2024, so very recent, in a website that is made for and by the farmers. It's called bullvine.com.
So the dairy sector in the United States is facing a pressing crisis as family-owned farms are rapidly disappearing. According to data from the USDA, in 1970, the United States had more than 648,000 dairy farms. And by 2022, just 24,000 of them remained. That's only 4% left from what existed 50 years prior. And this sharp drop highlights the issues that the business faces today and its significant trend eroding America's agricultural legacy.
So meanwhile, the average herd size on the remaining farms has increased. More than 60% of the total milk production currently occurs in farms with over 2,500 cows. Okay, just to know, but in Europe, it is not allowed to have a farm with more than 1,000 cows.
Wow.
So 2,500 cows to me is...
Out
amazing.
Of control.
Excessive, yeah.
Yeah.
How can you care for them?
So the consolidation of dairy farms has profound implications for rural communities. When small farms shut down, the ripple effects reverberate throughout the entire local economy. The reduction of farms means fewer jobs, and not only on the farm themselves, but also in the adjacent industries such as the feed suppliers, the equipment sellers, the local supermarkets. Dairy farming was the economic backbone of many communities, and it is disappearing, as we know here in Humboldt, actually.
Yeah. So eliminating small farms weakens these communities' social fabric. School enrollments are decreasing. Local businesses are seeing fewer customers. And the feeling of community that was generally based around farming is fading. This is more than simply economics. It's truly about the essential lifeblood of rural communities suffering.
And furthermore, large-scale farms often prioritize efficiency and productivity, which might result in less attention on sustainable methods and animal care. Large enterprises are more likely to emphasize profit above quality. This dynamic highlights the need to support local dairy farmers.
In 2022, researchers at the University of Tennessee matched regional milk prices to the critical production costs that are feed and labor. The data demonstrates why farmers are suffering. On average, a cow that produced 24,000 pounds of milk earned around $4,500. However, it cost $6,200 to make that milk, resulting in a loss for the dairy farmer of $1,700. So this financial burden is unsustainable, which explains why many small and medium-sized farms struggle to survive.
And not surprisingly and tragically, farmers are 3.5 times more likely to die by suicide than the general population. That's according to the National Rural Health Association.
Yeah, well, many dairy farmers believe that remaining in business is more than simply the financial line. It's also about family legacy. Dairy farming is typically passed down through generations, becoming firmly established in the family's identity and history. The value of family legacy in dairy farming cannot be emphasized enough.
The USDA reports that 97% of dairy farms in the U.S. are owned and maintained by families. However, succession planning presents a substantial challenge. According to the 2022 Census of Agriculture, farmers have an average age of 58 years, reflecting an aging profession. Younger generations are taking up the profession, which is encouraging. However, they account for just a small percentage, about 9% of young farmers aged 34 or younger.
Wow. And transferring ownership and operational expertise to the future generation is critical for the long-term viability of these family farms. But, okay, I didn't find an average price for the dairy farms. I guess it's because it's too varied between the small farms, the medium farms, and the huge farms. But I found the average debt of the large family farms is more than $1.8 million. Just the debt, right?
For one farm. Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine the complexity of the inheritance among several siblings, especially if there's only one of them who wants to be the future farmer. That's going to be tough.
How could you come out of that?
Yeah.
How Americans eat dairy has changed over time, with substantial repercussions for the business. The transition from liquid milk to solid dairy products such as cheese, yogurt, and butter impacts small and big dairy farms.
According to a USDA survey, the U.S. cheese consumption has increased significantly, with the typical American now eating more than 38 pounds yearly. That's me. But we'll talk more about cheese next month. But the transition to more cheese and less milk has shifted the advantage to the bigger producers capable of meeting the volume standards for cheese manufacturing.
But what is really making dairy farmers' lives complicated is something called cooperatives. Cooperatives handle 85% of U.S. milk, which is produced on farms that are 97% family-owned. Here's an article from Washington Monthly called Milking Profits, the Dairy Monopolies That Are Hurting Farmers.
Cooperatives are meant to be a democratic and producer-owned alternative to corporations. Farmers have long used cooperatives to join forces and bargain with dominant agribusiness. Instead of selling their milk solo to Big Butter, farmers can form a cooperative that helps market their products to larger buyers or even build a farmer-owned butter factory.
The number of agriculture cooperatives grew through the 60s, but then some cooperatives started to resemble the giant agricultural businesses that they were meant to counter. And then they consolidated and became bigger. The number of cooperatives dropped from 6,000 in 79 to only 2,000 in 2014. Maybe it even went down since then. And it was largely due to merging and buying out each other.
The co-ops also moved beyond just negotiating better milk trucking terms or selling milk to major dairy processors such as Kraft or Chobani by investing in their own equipment to ship and bottle their own milk and make their own cheese. And as dairy processing became a larger part of their business, co-op managers started to pay the members less for their milk in order to maximize processing profits. But these profits are not shared with the farmers. They go to the managers and the executives, while dairy farms go out of business at a historic rate.
As the nominal owners of the co-ops, farmers should be able to have a voice in the direction of their cooperative by electing board members or voting on major business decisions, but they don't have any of that anymore.
And if that is reassuring, I know the story is exactly the same in France, where I'm from. And to prepare the show, I watched two documentaries about milk. One was taking place in Europe, especially in Denmark. And that was called The Future of Milk. It is on YouTube. I recommend it. And the other one is called Milked, and it takes place in New Zealand, also on YouTube?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And it seems like it is the same story there as well.
So the farmers paid about $1.70 per gallon of milk, but they have to pay shipping both ways and obviously all the expenses, the feed costs, the fuel costs, power bills, and the list goes on. And by the end of the day, it's said that a dairy farmer truly earns about 30 cents per gallon of milk. So, yeah. So when you run in your local store with $5 to grab a gallon of milk, only about 30 cents of that reaches your local farmer for them to be able to feed their family with.
So the farmers have no choice but to live on the country subsidies, while the co-ops and the milk corporations assure great benefits for themselves.
Helped by the banks, they also push the farmers to invest insane amounts of money in infrastructure to always be producing more, to go expand their sales in Asia, where people are basically lactose intolerant. So, but what, they have this great big marketing campaign over there making these people believe that milk is actually good for their health, and they're changing the habits of Asian people and really to the detriment of their own health.
Oh, and when they have extra, at least in Europe, they transform the milk into powdered milk and they send it to Africa. In Africa, dairy farmers don't have subsidies and they cannot compete with the prices of the European milk coming in. So little by little, African farmers are losing their own market and having to close farms there too.
But the farmers seem to be waking up in the last few years by suing their co-ops. For example, more than 115 Northeastern farmers brought a suit against DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, that the largest dairy co-op in the U.S. The lawsuit alleges that DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, violates the Sherman Antitrust Act by conspiring to monopolize the fluid milk market. Specifically, farmers allege that DFA and other cooperatives upheld an agreement not to poach one another farmers, so killing the competition, shared information about how much they were paying the farmers for raw milk in order to discourage competition, resulting in lower prices, obviously. They ensured that those low prices were maintained across the market by negotiating within the supply chain, too. Superpower.
Wow. And so that was in 2020, and the farmers could have won, but because of COVID hitting the country, they had to accept a settlement.
But in 2022, DFA was accused of federal antitrust in New Mexico, too, and there seems to be more cases coming up.
Okay, but there's also another path possible. Here and there in the States, there are some true cooperatives made up of a small group of farmers who really control their sales and their prices. We have a few in Humboldt, I think, Ferrera and Son, Humboldt Creamery, Rumiano. Okay, I know Rumiano is not like a cooperative, it's a business, but they only work with a few local farmers, if I understood right. I tried to find more info about them, but I couldn't find much more. So please call us towards the end of the show and tell us what you know about our local milk production.
Yes, please. And bear in mind that as shoppers, Since the Great Depression, the federal government has played a role in aiding the nation's farms through subsidies, including direct payments, crop insurance, and loans. And in 2019, for example, farms received $22 billion in government payments.
Okay, so basically what we're saying is we pay twice for our milk in a way, you know? Like first you go to the grocery store, you buy your milk, but then a part of the taxes we pay to the government goes as subsidies to the farmers. The U.S. government spends around $38 billion each year in subsidies for the dairy and meat producers. So, yeah.
Wow, a lot. The EWG, the Environmental Working Group, says farm subsidies provided by the federal government are supposed to help agricultural producers manage the variations in agricultural production and profitability from year to year due to variations in weather, market prices, and other factors while ensuring a stable food supply.
In reality, this support is highly skewed. towards the five major program commodities of corn, soybean, wheat, cotton, and rice. And despite the rhetoric of preserving the family farm, the vast majority of farmers do not benefit from federal farm subsidy program, and most of the subsidies go to the largest and most financially secure farm operation. Mm. Big surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. So small commodity farmers qualify for a mere pittance, while producers of meat, fruit, and vegetables are almost completely left out of the subsidy game. Dairy and sugar producers have separate price and market controls that are highly regulated and can be costly to the government, too.
Yeah, so to conclude, over the past few decades, dairy farmers have been manipulated and crushed by the banks, the dairy corporations, and the co-ops. The sales prices are so low that the government has been making up for the deficits, and the practices they are using have destroyed the mental health of the farmers and the land. All that to produce bad quality food, as we will talk about in a minute.
All right, we recommend a website called cornucopia.org. There you'll find the scorecard for most of the organic dairy brands, which details many aspects of the brand, like if it is family-owned or not, if they use hormones or not, if they are grass-fed or not. That can help making a choice when you are in the aisles and you don't know which brand is the closest to your values.
Yeah,
it's a great option, that app.
Yeah, definitely.
Or the website.
Cornucopia.org.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at KMUD.org.
So we are moving now on to health impacts.
All right, let's get into it. So a study by the International Milk Genomics Consortium found that around the world, younger adults drink less milk than older adults. This trend could suggest that older adults are responding to mainstream advice about combating osteoporosis or that there is a shift in habits between generations. The report also shows that the global average calcium consumption is far below the level recommended for adults by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. The recommendation is about 1,000 to 1,300 milligrams of calcium daily, while the global average consumption was only 629 milligrams per day.
It's about half.
Yeah. So additionally, the report found a strong correlation between milk consumption and national per capita income. Wealthier countries had much more milk in their diets than low-income countries, drinking about 6 ounces of milk on average per day versus 2.5 ounces on average. Another factor to consider in milk consumption is the prevalence of lactose intolerance in each country. In some countries, lactose intolerance can be as high as 100% of the population, such as in Yemen and South Korea. Lactose intolerance greatly affects the amount of milk consumed by a population, as well as dairy in general.
So when analyzing whether dairy is healthy or harmful, it truly depends. Dairy consumption is controversial, and for every study that shows the disadvantages of drinking milk, there is one that proves the benefits.
American scientist and founder of the paleo diet, Lauren Cordain, exposes various physiological mechanisms by which dairy can cause harm. One recent example was in a paper by Melnick called Milk Signaling in the Pathogenesis of Type 2 Diabetes. So the theory presented that milk consumption beyond the weaning period may overstimulate pancreatic beta cells and cell death. Death of these beta cells are hallmarks of type 2 diabetes, and it follows that milk consumption must contribute to type 2 diabetes.
Or does it? If that theory was true, we might expect to see increased rates of type 2 diabetes in people consuming dairy products, right? But in fact, we see just the opposite.
Yeah, the study looked at a fatty acid found in milk, cheese, yogurt, and butter and correlated them with the risk factor for diabetes. So that fatty acid is called transpalmitoleic acid, which we'll call TP acid. Cool.
Okay, so here's what they found. At a baseline, higher circulating levels of this acid were associated with healthier levels of blood cholesterol, inflammatory markers, insulin levels, and insulin sensitivity, after adjustment for other risk factors, of course. And during follow-up, individuals with higher circulating levels of TP acid had a much lower risk of developing diabetes, with about a 60% lower risk among the participants with the highest levels of this TP acid.
So people with the highest levels had a third of the risk of developing diabetes over these 3 years that volunteers were followed. Higher TP acid levels were also associated with smaller waist circumference, lower triglycerides, higher HDL, and lower C-reactive protein.
What? Since TP acid is a fatty acid found in the fat of the milk, the study also supports the idea that full fat – okay, be ready. Maybe you're not ready to hear that – full fat, whole dairy products are beneficial, which directly contradicts the low fat hysteria that was and still continues to be a big fad in the States.
Yeah.
Don't fall for the advertisement. You need good fat in your body.
It's, yeah. Anything that says like
low fat or skim milk.
It's been altered in ways that takes out.
It's not good.
The beneficial components.
Yeah. We need
right?
those heart healthy fats.
Yeah. You know, you've heard it like. Basically, the belief is that fat make you fat. And it's been debunked.
Yeah.
Fat doesn't make you fat. Actually, sugar and industrialized products make you fat.
Trans fats are
trans
the ones
fats.
You stay away from.
Totally.
Not the, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So a 1 cup serving of whole fat milk offers all 3 macronutrients, carbs, proteins, and fats. That 1 cup has 55% of the daily value of B12, 23% of the daily value of calcium, 20% of phosphorus, 13% of vitamin D, and 8% of potassium. It also provides good amounts of vitamin A, selenium, zinc, and magnesium, so full of vitamins and nutrients.
Wow. And the fatty components of milk depend on the diet and the treatment of the animal it comes from, so this can also influence the effects on your body.
For instance, research shows that milk from grass-fed cows raised on pasture may have up to 92% more omega-3 fatty acid. That's like a different product, really.
Yeah.
And it can have also 94% more of, I don't know what that is, but...
It's basically omega-6, you know.
Conjugated linoleic acid?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you say? So,
it's an omega 6 fatty acid.
Oh, so basically it has way more omega 3 and omega 6.
That's why when we talk later a little bit about why too much is not
right.
good, then, you
mm-hmm.
know, because we've talked in past shows about how there's like the ratio
right.
of omega 3s to omega 6 needs to be higher.
Right.
You know, in our culture, we're eating so many things.
I saw a little video of the Foggy Bottom Boys, which is a farm in, I think they are in Ferndale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that the ratio in their milk, which we've talked about it, like it's not like omega-3, omega-6 is good or is bad. It's just that you have to have the right ratio.
Exactly.
And they were saying that in their milk, because it's grass-fed on pasture, the ratio is super good.
Awesome.
Cool.
Nice.
All right, so basically what we're saying is low-fat and skim dairy products lack most of or all of the milk's healthy fats.
Yeah. So, yeah, watch out for that fat. One study found that people who consumed the most dairy fat were actually at lower risk of heart attack. For women, the risk was reduced by 26%, while for men, the risk was 9% lower. Another study showed that people who ate the most full-fat dairy had a 69% lower risk of cardiovascular death.
Wow. Nice. And with all this being said, some people are still very sensitive to dairy and don't tolerate it well. So don't force yourself if you're having a bad reaction just to get those good, healthy fats. Chris Kresser, globally renowned expert, clinician, and educator in the fields of functional medicine and ancestral health, believes it boils down to the health of the gut.
Yeah, if someone has compromised intestinal permeability, that's called leaky gut, it's more likely that their immune system will respond to potentially allergenic component to milk.
Yeah, this is especially true for people who are gluten intolerant because it has been shown that milk proteins commonly cross-react with gluten. If you react to gluten, it's more likely that you are also going to react to milk.
Interesting. People with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, which is one of the major causes of irritable bowel syndrome, may be more likely to react to milk because the bacteria in their small intestines aggressively ferments lactose, the sugar in milk, causing gas, bloating, and other GI symptoms.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So while it's true that some people react to the protein in the milk, most who are sensitive are actually reacting to the sugar in the milk. That's the lactose. The enzyme lactase must be present to digest the lactose. So some people don't produce lactase on their own, depending on the race and the ethnicity. So it really goes from 1% to 95% chance that you do or not. So your ability to digest milk doesn't depend on you. It depends on your guts.
Exactly. And if you're not sure where you stand with dairy, the best approach is to remove it for 30 days and then reintroduce it and see what happens. Elimination and reintroduction is still the standard for determining sensitivity to a particular food.
All right, we're going to go to a little song. And during the song, you can start calling us. It is 944. The number is 923-3911. We want your comments, your questions, your inputs. And remember that we have two more shows coming about milk. So if you want to ask out something and we don't know the answer, because we don't know many of the answers, we'll have 2 more months to find the answer for it.
I know. I feel like even in the 3 months, there's no way we could cover everything.
Oh, I know. Do a year of milk. Yeah, how about that?
And apparently we have a caller already. Hello, caller.
Good morning, Dora.
Hey, good morning, Doro, with an O at the end, I'd rather.
Okay, well, and you were corrected for saying semen when that's how it's pronounced.
Sorry.
It's seminal fluid, not seminal fluid. Anyway, so early on you were talking about chocolate milk. Chocolate milk that's made in an industrial format is milk that's the result of automatic milking of cows, which is the predominant method of milking cows, eliminating the labor to save costs, but also eliminating a job, also desensitizing to the milking process. So when cows are milked by machines, they are drained, and then they result in releasing pus and blood.
Ew.
That blood goes into the milk, and the milk is not considered tainted by these subsidized laws. The milk is then either turned into chocolate milk, so it can be sold with the semen, or excuse me, with the pus and the blood in it. They also market strawberry milk.
You're kidding.
I absolutely am not.
No, I believe it. I believe it.
Wow. Wait. Are you in the milk industry or something?
I was raised in the Midwest, and I worked on dairy farms. Yes.
And inside scoop.
This is a product that's directly marketed to children.
Oh, my God.
So, well, yeah. And then we were talking just the other day about then all the health factors, especially children are facing when it comes to, like, hormone dysregulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a result of the genetic engineering of cattle. So two things that are served for breakfast to children, milk and cereal. Cereal lowers one's hormonal drive, interrupting hormonal progression in a natural way, which is one of the reasons why with all the steroids in milk, young girls are coming into their mens at 11 and 12.
Yep.
Higher incident of colorectal cancer in men under the age of 40 than ever. In fact, doctors are now advising that boys, men, start getting colorectal exams at 25 because their food is so poisoned. Last thing I'd like to say is this, on a more positive note. If you are thinking about having a hamburger for lunch, I recommend that you go and you observe a mother cow and a baby cow looking at each other's beautiful saucer-like eyes. Do it for that 30 minutes it might have taken you to order that hamburger, and then go home and have a sweet potato with some adzuki beans, and you will have so much more nutrition that you won't believe, and you're not going to interrupt your diet nor the biosphere.
Wait, so I want to ask you again about the story you were saying at the beginning. So would that mean that on the farms in the Midwest, they put the bad quality milk from the end of the milking process on a different side? They don't mix it with the rest of the milk, and they sell it cheaper for chocolate milk or something? How would that work?
I worked on a family farm of less than 100 cows. Okay, this was in the 70s.
Yeah, that was a while ago. That doesn't exist anymore.
And to hand milk a cow is really, really, it's as intimate as a mother nursing. I mean, you look at your cow and you just pat her on the belly and you're like, thank you so much, honey, for this contribution. But it is not the family, what we consider a family farm anymore in exponential numbers is gross. They're walking around in their, you know, in family farms, they're out in the field. Industrial, and just like with our cannabis culture, it's not family farming anymore, it's factory farming. Mm-hmm. And it's not agriculture anymore, it's agribusiness.
Thanks.
And as we have seen firsthand, you know what happens to an industry when it's made an agriculture, when it's industrialized, as opposed to being allowed to remain cultural, because you lose all of the human interface and the self-corrections that are required, because you're not worried about the dollar. You're concerned about the health of your animals, and animal welfare is a term that we don't use enough. What about the welfare of these cows? Again, stop, look at a mother cow looking at her baby's eyes just for a few minutes, and it will put you off dairy and dairy products like crazy. I'd like to hear another show about the qualities of goat milk.
Yes,
we're bringing
that up.
Next show.
We're doing a three-part series.
Groovy. And, you are what you eat. Americans have higher incidence of illness, diabetes, coronary heart disease, bad gut issues, leaky gut issues, because it's the garbage that we're putting in our mouths, and our bodies are overwhelmed. So an elimination diet, as you were talking about, with maybe wait a month to have some milk.
Yeah.
Elimination diets are true for everything. I eat Barbara's Cheesy Poofs, but I only eat 10 of them at a time. Because if you look at the bag, while it has quality ingredients, there is a serving portion size. And you're not supposed to eat the whole bag.
What does it say again?
On packaged industrial food.
No, what is it? Is that some cereal you're talking about?
No, it's a snack.
It's a snack, okay, sorry.
Poof, you know, it's not a Cheeto full of toxic chemicals from Kraft. It's Barbara's organic cheese puffs.
Okay, now I get it.
But again, I regulate my uptake because I want the treat, but I don't want to hurt myself.
Very good.
Well, all
and
good
that
points.
Then comes to responsible eating habits.
Thank you so much for calling, and I am blown away by your story with the chocolate milk.
It's a fact. It's sad and sickening.
sad and sickening for real. We're going to have another caller, but since you're from the Midwest, I want to touch next month about, you must know that in the Midwest, it's mainly illegal immigrants who are milking the cows. And I wonder what's going to happen in this next month with them and how the milks, all the cows will be milked. Let's see.
Two short things about that. There's no such thing as an illegal alien unless, I just don't believe in that. We're supposed to
That's
be an
good.
Open
Thanks.
Nation. The other thing is that most milk is not handled by humans. It's handled by automation.
Oh, but I know farms in the Midwest where this is the Mexicans who are waking up at 5 in the morning to help the process, if not doing by hand. This is not the farm owner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's hope that, that's now we're talking politics rather than humanity, and politics and humanity have no correlation in this moment.
All right, we're going to take the second caller. Thanks for calling
us. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Be helpful.
Hello, caller.
Hey, good morning. And I really want to say thank you for doing the show. I've really enjoyed your show a couple of months in a row now. And I kind of wanted to continue on where the other caller was. I do like my hamburgers, but I've come to appreciate my upbringing, where we had massive gardens, and every year we were busy planting and harvesting and canning. And, if you eat a real balanced diet, and I've actually looked at my plate, I think less than one-fifth to one-sixth of my plate would be a meat product. And the rest is vegetables and fruits and grains. Yeah, you can still have your meat in moderation and have a very healthy, balanced diet. And I was raised on a farm, and I definitely remember going out every morning. We milked at 6 and 6. And, you definitely get to know your cows. And, yeah. Of course, I remember the first time I actually drank store-bought milk, me and my three brothers all looked at each other as like, this is wrong. This is bad.
You just know when you taste it.
So,
well, we took it back. We actually had bought it at Safeway's in Bozeman, Montana. And we took it back, and it said the date was supposed to be good, but this is bad. They said, oh, no worries. Go get another one. And we brought it home, and the same thing. And,
equally as bad.
So when was it that you were milking and knowing your cows?
Yeah.
When was it?
Yeah. Which real milk.
Oh. Did you hear my question?
I did not.
Oh, sorry. So when was it that you were milking by hand and knowing your cows? A while ago?
It'd be the late 60s, early 70s.
Because I was saying to you, because Sheila and Danny don't know much about that industry, but I do, because both of my families were in it. On my father's side, there was a dairy, and that is still, actually. And on my mother's side, a meat farm.
Right.
And so I grew up in the 80s, and in the 80s already, and my uncle's farm was only about 100 cows at the time. Now he has a little more. Already in the 80s, like the relationship with the cow was already not as good as what you said from the 60s. Like already with 100 cows, it's difficult to know them personally, and you don't have so much time to make a relationship with them. Okay, I'm not going to say on the radio the story I told you yesterday, but I've seen horrors happening in
yesterday.
That farm.
I'm traumatized from you just telling me what happened there.
But my uncle still, he's almost 90, and he leases his land out now. But the reason is he really enjoys being out there with the cattle. He's still up there in Montana.
How cool.
And so he does. He takes care of those cows. And I love the way that they're free-ranged. And they get moved twice a year. They bring them down in the valley in the summertime and up in the hills in the wintertime. But those are truly beautiful cattle.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, they're going to be wonderful on the plate as well. And, but anyway, I do appreciate your show. I always look forward to listening to your show, you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we appreciate you. We
appreciate your feedback.
One of my best memories of when I was a kid was during winter and spring, we had to bring the cows to the field. So I don't know in English the name, but the cows before they are pregnant for the first time, they have a special name, the adolescents, let's say. We have to bring them to a field, and they're going to stay the entire summer over there. And that was 10 kilometers away. And so me, my sister, my two cousins who were about our age, and my dad and my uncle, we would just bring those 30 cows, more or less, the six of us. So my two cousins at the front running, me because I was smaller at the back, knocking on their ass so that they go faster. My uncle and my dad on the side, blocking the sides. And we had to pass by two villages. You know, France, the villages are very close from each other. And so that was taking the entire day, and that was just so much fun.
I'm sure.
That was
Sounds
great.
Like an experience. Yeah.
That
yeah.
doesn't happen anymore. Now my uncle puts them in a truck and brings them to the field. That is it. Yep.
Wow. Yep.
The magic's gone.
Yep. So in conclusion.
Yeah.
Milk may be a valuable part of a balanced diet for many people. However, the key lies in the quality of the milk you are buying. So try to do whole milk instead of skimmed. Try to do organic to avoid all the pesticides, the antibiotics, and the hormones. And maybe raw. We're going to talk next week about
Can't wait to get into the raw versus pasteurized conversation.
Yeah, we didn't get to dive into all that today, but
we'll bring it back next month.
Three months
of milk, baby. So, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, we have a lot to cover. Thank you all for tuning in.
The choice is yours, the fourth Thursday of the month. See you next month and have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, Javi.
Good one.
Enjoy your milk.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.